This is Jewish Board Talk with Cherise Zifford, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
I'm absolutely delighted to have Professor Ryan Blumenthal as my guest now. Professor Blumenthal is a prominent figure in forensic pathology in South Africa and aims to improve public awareness of forensic science through his books, including his bestseller, Autopsy and Risking Life for Death, and his documentary, Lighting Pathologist. He recently had an article in the Jewish Report on lessons on life from a forensic pathologist that I thought so insightful. I'm not sure we're going to get through all those lessons, but I'm delighted to have Professor Blumenthal as my guest now to tell me more. Professor, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Cherise. An honor to be here.
I've often wanted to have you on my show, and it was just luck that we bumped into each other at Limoges, so thank you. It's good to have you. Just tell me how you got into pathology and what your professional life has been like thus far.
It's been an adrenaline rush. That's all I can say. It's nonstop. You're everywhere. You're up mountains. You're in caves. You're at mass disasters. You're behind your microscope. Some days the world's big. Some days the world's small. So, yeah, would I exchange it for anything else? No, it's been an amazing journey. I have no regrets.
Is it what you set out to be, and is it what you thought it would be?
Well, I think I'm a bit of a nerd, so I like the nerd aspect of problem solving, and it's where I belong to be. I can't see myself doing anything else.
You know, there's so much literature on pathologists, from crime novels to movie series. How much of that is actually accurate?
Yeah, there's an enormous hunger for forensic pathology out there. People are fascinated by this field, and rightly so, because, I mean, you're dealing with life and death. So it fascinates us. Your question as to how accurate this is, one must always beware of sensationalism, because that's what sells newspapers, that's what gets clickbait. Yeah, sometimes when I watch something, I think to myself, yeah, look, that's far-fetched. But then again, some of the things that happen in real day is more far-fetched than you can ever imagine, and I think they have to tone it down for the papers and the press.
How much do you kind of consciously look at other kinds of forensic stories out there?
Well, it's good to know what the public knows, because as I discussed in my book, Autopsy, about the perfect murder, you have to assume they know all the methods, and you have to assume that they're cleverer than you. So it's good to know what's being shown out there in the real world. We need to be appraised of what's happening. So, for example, if there's a new method of suicide, I need to be made aware of this, etc.
So you've written... firstly, how many books have you written?
Well, I wrote 5 fiction novels, which failed horribly. They're somewhere in some secondhand bookstore under other books, not even gathering dust. They in obscurity.
Why?
I wrote The Rain Beetle, The Butterfly, The Seed, all African fiction novels, which didn't do too well. And then my non-fiction stuff did better, I think. Wow. So I've written 5 books for the public, 5 fiction novels and 2 non-fiction novels.
Why do you think your fiction flopped?
This is one of those questions that lie awake at night. Who knows?
Are there murder mysteries?
Yeah, it's like forensic pathology set in ancient Africa. So it's very different stuff. They're out there, the books. If you do a bit of a search, I'm sure you'll find them. Ryan Blumenthal, The Butterfly, The Rain Beetle, The Seed, MMA... There's a whole bunch of African fiction novels out there.
Well, thanks for the challenge. I'm definitely going to try and find them, and I'll give you any feedback that if I get any insights.
Thank you.
Ryan, okay, you wrote an article, or I'm not sure if it was from your talk at Limoges, on lessons learnt as a pathologist. And you've got 11 lessons. How did you come to those 11 lessons? What was the kind of thinking behind it?
Okay, there were 17 lessons that got sanitized. It got whittled down. Some of my more important lessons actually got omitted. So, for example, one of my big lessons, which I would tell the South African public, is there's no reason to go out after midnight in South Africa. There's just no reason at all. When I go through my dockets and I look at the times of accidents and homicides, it's always 2:30 in the morning, 3:30 a.m., 4:15. There's no reason to be out after midnight. That would be like one of my big lessons.
Is it drink? Is it alcohol? Are those alcohol related?
Yeah, there's so many variables, but all I know is just from when I look at the deaths for accidents and homicides, most happen after midnight. So all I can assume from a forensic pathologist is after midnight.
Stay home.
There's no reason to be out. Just stay home.
You and Cinderella, 12 o'clock bedtime.
Yeah.
Your second lesson? Oh, wait, what was omitted? What else was omitted?
There was a couple of things omitted. Look, there's some that I'm very proud of, and if I had to triage them, which I would like to do. So, look, these lessons come from the cold, hard world of the mortuary. You know, one cannot help but become a bit philosophical when one sees this much death. So I'm on about 15,000 autopsies. I've been a forensic pathologist for 25 years. And, you know, you can tell so much from the autopsy table. So you can tell the health of a nation. You can tell if a new gang has moved into a neighborhood. You can tell if there's new or emergent drugs or diseases. All of this without leaving the comfort of your autopsy suite. And from seeing all these things, it just emerges to me some of these lessons. You know, that there needs to be feedback mechanisms to the living from what we're seeing in the dead to make us live happier, better, better life. So my duty with writing these lessons, because a lot of these forensic books and programs is all about death. And I think that's what separates me from the other forensic pathologists out there that write all these case studies, and that this is about the reader, the listener, the watcher. It's about you. I don't want to see the same death twice. And therein was the key for why I wrote these letters, these lessons.
Did you write them for yourself or for the public? Is it?
Most authors write something that they just have to get out of them, like they're tortured souls and they just have to get this on paper. So I had to put these lessons out there. So like if I can go through one or two of these lessons and maybe expound upon them with
yes,
your consent.
Sure.
So the first one I said is get out of your own head. You know, if you live in your own head, it is like an echo chamber. You need to open those windows and doors and let light in. You need to socialize. I mean, even if you look at, you know, Cesar Millan, you know, you get some dog that he puts in a pound with other dogs and it gets re-socialized. I think we're living very solitary lives nowadays. So my advice to people is get out. Go have coffee. Find the wallflowers. Find the introverts. Find those people that aren't being thought of, and just take yourself and that person out for coffee. That is a great start, and that can probably save lives. Just a simple thing like that.
Are you referring to suicides at all? Yeah.
Yeah, this has got to do with mental health. It's got to do with we're social. So one of the other lessons in my book is that we are mammals. We're born like a mammal and we die like a mammal. And mammals, we're social mammals. So we have to keep socializing, and I'm seeing a lot of solitary existences these days. You cannot believe how many death scenes I go to where they live alone in a flat or in a house and they're found dead, decomposed because no one finds them. So just socialize, increase your networks, infect each other with your spirit, and I can tell you only good will come from that. Have more coffee meetings with people. Is my other message.
I think that's a great message. The one I particularly like also is that nature doesn't care about your private logic. I love that. Because we all have our private logic that we expect everybody else to live to as well.
So that lesson I actually learned from a book called How to Be Happy Though Human from W. Baron Wolf from the 1928. He was a psychiatrist. He was born in 1900, died in 1935. He was killed in a bicycle accident. But that's where I heard that for the first time. Nature does not care about your private logic. And that is a huge lesson that has to be relearned. I mean, it was almost a century ago that those words were said, and I want to reintroduce them to the world. Nature does not care about your private logic.
It's profound. So what is the lesson from that?
Well, we've been tinkered with by Hollywood and Disney and narratives and agendas. There's so much. So my second book is called Risking Life or Death, and it's about low-cost exchange principle, which is contact theory. So every contact leaves a trace. We go to a death scene, we leave something there, and we take something with us. But I realized that contact theory is not only about physical evidence. It's also about ideas. Ideas enter minds like worms enter peaches. Some people are not that clever to come up with these ideas themselves. They've definitely come in contact with an idea, and the intensity of contact depends on intensity, duration, and nature of contact. How hard, how long, and what kind of contact. And it's like brainwashing. So some people are not that clever to come up with these ideas themselves. It's what they are being exposed to, whether it's social media, their friends, their people. And we've been tinkered with in some aspects. So we've got to get back to basics, and we just got to get back to factory settings, normal, whatever normal may be in your mind. Get back to it, please.
Right. And number three I've got here is finitude.
Sorry, I never heard that one.
Finitude. Your word, not mine.
Oh, finitude. Yes, finitude. Yeah, so, I mean, we all live our lives. You know, we've got our plans. We have our goals. But every day I am shocked and astounded by sudden, unexplained, untimely deaths. These were highly motivated people. I mean, you know, as I wrote in my book, there was a guy that was buying chinos for 999 Rand. Got killed in a pedestrian vehicle accident. Rocked up at my mortuary in the packet or his pants, his trousers for 999 Rand. I mean, this was the guy that was just going to go buy pants. Then there was one, this guy bought flowers for his girlfriend or missus and also got killed in a pedestrian vehicle accident, rocked up at my mortuary with his bouquet of flowers. And the craziest case is one that I had a month ago, which is so bizarre, like it wakes you up, shakes you up, it grabs you by... just grabs you by the scruff and shakes you. I mean, I had a 42-year-old guy that was stung by a solitary wasp on his foot and died. And there were five kids in the family. Four died of a car crash. He was the last one alive, and he gets stung by this little wasp and dies. So finitude means, like, it's the opposite of infinity. We are not here forever. We have a limited amount of time. We waste so much of this time. We waste so much of this time with drama and, you know, I would really invite people to come and see what we see on a day-to-day basis. It wakes you up, shakes you up. It shows you that there's no time for rubbish in your life. Just, like, get on with the main things of life, please.
Prof, are you traumatized by what you see? And do you seek help mental health? No, you spoke about mental health.
Look, we are highly trained for this field, so we know nothing better. This is what we do every single day. So you cannot become, so they try and systemically desensitize you to this stuff over time, but you can never become totally desensitized. You actually become, I think, more sensitive to it, to death and dying. And you want to get the message out there that you're seeing a lot of crap in, you know, people must just pull themselves together. So here's my other statement that maybe was omitted, and that is that 99% of all your problems are self-created. Almost all our problems are self-created or human-created problems. 1% is maybe from God above. 99% of our problems are your own problems that you yourself have created.
Which means you yourself can solve.
Yeah, absolutely.
We, I think, have time for one more. What would you like to share with us?
I'm your guest. This is, I'm in your hands here.
Okay, be a lighthouse. How about that one to end off with?
All right. Well, I love the metaphor of a lighthouse, and I've got a thing for lighthouses. I've got a book on lighthouses here. But a lighthouse to me, firstly, lighthouses are lonely creatures. They stand there shining brightly. They warn others of the dangers. they know where the dangerous reefs are, and they get battered by the waves and the weather, and yet they stand up tall and shine. And I think that is my metaphor for why I wrote this article, because yeah, it feels lonely, and I think I've got messages. I know where the dangerous reefs are, and I just want to give some hope and shine despite being battered and cancelled and who knows what else. That's all I want to do, just stand tall and shine.
So you take breaks.
Yeah, I'm going away for 2 weeks now tomorrow. I'm taking leave. This is my last interview, by the way, for a long time.
And you also create magic.
Yeah, one needs one's hobby. One needs sense of humor. So I discussed hobbies. You need a solitary hobby and you need a social hobby in life. A solitary hobby is for yourself in the quiet moments. That's for your own pleasure. And then you need a social hobby that can give you community access and maybe monetize. A human should have two hobbies, one for themselves and one for the social or community.
Ryan, we're going to leave it at that. But I'm pleased you're going on holiday, and I'm so pleased I bumped into you. And thank you for sharing. I'm going to look for your books. And I think it's all very profound, and it's good to get some kind of insight into a field that we think we know but probably don't really understand.
It's been an absolute honor to meet you, Cherise. Thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you. That was Professor Ryan Blumenthal. He is a prominent figure in forensics pathology in South Africa, and he uses his books to improve public awareness of health.